Support for 89.7 NPR News comes from the James at Ohio State. The best outcomes for treating cancer come from early detection. The James Cancer Diagnostic Center is designed to provide rapid evaluation and a clear diagnosis to those who suspect they have cancer. Learn more at cancer.osu.edu/diagnosticcenter.
Good morning and welcome to All Sides Weekend. This is the Book Show. I'm Christopher Purdy, delighted to be here. This is the time of the month when we get together and talk with the panel about recommendations of great reads and what you can expect coming down the pike in the publishing world, etc. And I am pleased to introduce Cassie Rose, who is WOSU's book critic. Her blog is thelongestchapter.com. Very important for anyone who loves to read. Michelle Herman is here. She is Professor Emerita of Creative Writing at the Department of English at The Ohio State University. She is an author with a new book out. We're going to remind everybody in just a moment. She is an advice columnist. She is a dancer, and that's Michelle. And Chris Hickey is here. Chris is the Youth Services Manager from the Columbus Metropolitan Library, the Whetstone Branch. And Chris brings us the quick picks every month. I call those the books everybody wants to read, and Chris will tell you how to skip the line. So let's skip the line. What do you got for
us? Okay, so quick pick, just a reminder, we have them in our buildings. You might be on the hold list. You walk in, you grab it on the display, and you have jumped the line. So I'm going to start with some romance. So I have a book called In Your Dreams by Sarah Adams, and she is known for her When in Rome series, amongst other things. But this is the fourth book and final book of the When in Rome series. So James is a farmer, and he has always been desperately in love with his best friend's younger sister. And Madison accidentally calls him because she's thinking about moving back to the small town. She didn't mean to call him. She meant to call someone else. So he says he wants her to come back desperately. So he says, oh, I have a farm to table restaurant. She's a chef. I want you to come and be the chef for it. And she agrees to do that. There is no farm to table restaurant. So in fact, his farm is struggling, but he loves her so much, he is going to make this happen. So When in Rome, it is a fictional version of a real town in Tennessee. So it's going to have a happy, this is one of those, it's going to, everything's going to be all right. It's comforting. It's very sweet. There's a little bit of steam. If you've got cowboy fantasies, this is one for you, or like sexy farmer, you know, she catches him coming out of the shower. But James is just a sweetheart. He's a fixer. Like, he wants her to be okay. And he believes in her even when she doesn't really believe in herself and other people think she's kind of a screw up. So it's based on the movie Sabrina. So the Audrey Hepburn movie Sabrina. So it's just super sweet. And she is the younger brother of the main character of the first book, which is When in Rome. His name is Noah Walker. So this is Madison Walker.
I love books where there's that possibility. I mean, he comes up with the whole the farm to table thing. He doesn't do it, but he doesn't think for a moment. I mean, I would be sitting there thinking, well, I can't do this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to. But, you know, it just throws the door open for that.
Yes, he will do anything to get her back. And this is one of those romance series where you don't have to read all the books or in any particular order. They have the same setting and some of the characters pop in and out. But if you haven't read the other book, it's perfectly fine to jump in.
So you've
here.
Got some steam. You promised.
There's a little bit of steam. Yeah, there's a coming out of the shower, cowboy fantasy, sexy
okay.
farmer thing going
I'm
on.
I'm going to leave that alone and just think that's wonderful. Yeah. That is a quick pick from Chris Hickey, who is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch of the Columbus Library. She brings us those books that, well, I guess it's appropriate to say those hot books.
Yeah, we've got a few of those.
People want to read. Cassie Rose is usually, God love her, the adult in the room. And she is going to bring us a recommendation right now.
I think I'll start with a book, Christopher, that you and I were talking about at the opening of the show, The Director by Daniel Kelman. This book came to me because the International Booker Prize long list came out a couple weeks ago, and it is on that list of 13 books. And I had meant to read it last year. And this book reimagines the life of the German film director, G.W. Pabst, who was attributed to, I mean, he made Greta Garbo famous. And it is known that he came to Hollywood during the 1930s to escape Germany with his wife and his son. But beyond that, there's not, you know, this author really does reimagine his life in terms of why he went back to Germany, for one, and also, what about this film that people know about that never got produced, and what happened to that film? I was fascinated by the book because of how the author connects characters that will be in the beginning of the book and seem to just go away, and then they come back. So the book opens with this scene of an assistant director, a former assistant director of G.W. Pabst, being taken out of a sanatorium and brought onto a live TV show. And he's, because of he famously was connected to G.W. Pabst, but the man is losing his memory. So he's pretty off on the show and making a lot of mistakes. And when they bring up about this film that he worked on with Pabst, he says, no, that film never was produced. It was produced, never went live. It never made it to the theaters. And so there's this little argument on air. And then the book goes on after that, not at all talking about the film. So we get Pabst in Hollywood, and he has this huge argument with someone at a party, which, again, we don't know who this person is, but he comes back. The Hollywood people are micromanaging him. He's this brilliant director. He ends up going back to Germany, and I won't tell you why, but he is believing he will come back to Hollywood, but he gets trapped. And then he is producing films for the Ministry of Propaganda in Germany. What's fascinating about this book is not only the characters, but how you get drawn into the film world, the directing world, what it is like to feel like a genius director and have people in Hollywood micromanaging you, or to sit in front of a minister with a Third Reich being very nice to you and kind, but telling you what you need to say to him, and you having to realize, okay, I've got to do what they're telling me to do. And how he navigates that life in Berlin, and how his wife can't navigate it because of what she sees. I mean, the war is present there. I mean, I'll just say he gets trapped because of the invasion of Poland. But it's not about World War II. It's about this director and how he psychologically struggled with the realities of his greatness and the minimization.
It's historical fiction. I read it last year and liked it a lot. And you made a point that that was very poignant to me, was he was handled by the Hollywood suits when he was there. Mm-hmm. And they had no idea who he was, really.
Yes.
You know, he was the director under contract and you're going to do this. But they really had no concept of what Mm-mm. what gifts he had. And you wonder if that's pervasive with everybody, if you weren't Greta Garbo. I mean, if you weren't somebody.
Well, they were very judgmental.
Yes,
I mean, and very making great assumptions. He has this wonderful idea that he tries to sell to them or say to them, and you can see that it is brilliant, but they say, no, 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 you're going to do this other one.
Won't play in Peoria, so we're not doing it.
Correct.
You know, yeah. It was,
correct.
The marriage of commerce and art is always a hold on. But I like that book very much, and I'm glad. I thought you had recommended it last year, but maybe not. But I read it, and every time I read something I love, I say Cassie Rose recommended it. So there you
well,
are.
Well, I've come after the fact then.
Good enough for me. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend. This is the book show, and this is Michelle Herman. First of all, you just had an event signing your new book. So remind us about the new book.
The newest book is an advice book for children. It's called The Kid's Guide to Life, A Kid's Guide to Life, available everywhere. And the audio version of it is coming soon.
Are you doing it?
Oh, yes. Speaking of which, my last book for adults that came out a year ago, If You Say So, is now out in every audiobook platform, finally. More and more, I'm finding that people are only reading audiobooks.
Right, they're listening. Right, yeah.
And I can't do it. I don't know about you all, but the first book I'm going to talk about, I tried to listen to on audio, and I was so distracted by the narrator who was doing voices for the various characters that I thought, no.
Did they use more than one voice in a novel? Or
you mean more than one actor doing it? Occasionally, but in this case, I think this is more common. The woman narrating, it was changing her voice for each character. And I just thought, no, I'm not a child listening to a bedtime story. I shut it down. But let me tell you, okay, so I am revisiting, for regular listeners of this show, last time I was here, I talked about having just begun This Is Not About Us, Allegra Goodman's latest book, and I told the story of my pettiness and how I'd never read her before because her first book and mine came out at the same time, and she got a huge amount of attention, and I got bupkis. So this is a morality play, perhaps I could say, or a folk tale with a with a moral. So I had only just started it when I was here last time, but I was enjoying it, and I recommended it on that basis. I kept reading, and I ended up loving this book so much. Like, it is perhaps my favorite book I've read in the last year, my favorite new book.
In spite of yourself.
In spite of myself. And so it's a family saga. It covers, I think it's four generations of a family. And the way it's done in short stories. And at first, you can't really tell how they're going to fit together. You know they're about the same people, but they're moving back and forth in time, and it feels kind of disparate. But by the third or fourth chapter or story, the pieces begin to fit together. And yeah, I mean, it's one, two, three, four generations in this family. And you begin to see how all the pieces fit together. It's so moving. And every character is so beautifully drawn. I'm a sucker for a good domestic family story if it's beautifully written. And I feel so sad that I deprived myself of Allegra Goodman for all these years. But I bring you this one with the highest recommendation. And it's both, it's soothing in that it's there's a lot of healing going on, but it's not preachy. And it has its dark moments between family estrangements. There's all kinds of complications. So you can sink your teeth into it. It's a if you like this sort of thing, if you like books that are about relationships. But at the same time, it's not distressing. So
tell me about Allegra Goodman. What do you know about her otherwise, aside from this book?
Well, what I now know about her, since I read this and I loved it so much, I immediately got on the library website and reserved another one just to see. I reserved this book, Sam, which I just finished reading yesterday, that I loved almost as much as this new one, which only means that she's becoming a better and better writer. Sam is about a girl, then woman, named Sam, and it opens when she's a small child. And so the beginning was a little rough going for me, and I thought, oh, this is not going to be as good. I mean, it's in third person, but it is in a kind of third person I really enjoy. It takes on the character's voice. I mean, the book begins, there is a girl, and her name is Sam. She has a mother named Courtney and a dad who is sort of around, sort of not. So that kind of naive voice, I thought, I don't know if I'm going to be able to take it. But the voice grows up as Sam grows up. And by a quarter of the way into the book, I was totally sold. And by the end of the book, I was sobbing. I'll tell you in advance, it seems like things are really going badly, but it takes that turn. I think, you know, 19th century novels, with all the awful things that happen, at the end, all the strands come together and everything is fine for everyone, which is why I love those Victorian novels so much. And it's kind of like that. So I also recommend Sam. And I have now either ordered to buy or put myself on the waiting list at the library for every one of Allegra Goodman's books, with the exception of the first one, which I still can't quite get over my. I thought, the first one's probably not as good. Nobody's first book is as good as their later books. But I am now an Allegra Goodman stan.
So. And you heard it here first on All Sides Weekend Books, and we are going to take a quick break and come back. Don't go away.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
We are back, All Sides Weekend. This is The Book Show. I'm Christopher Purdy. Thank you for joining us. My guests are Michelle Herman. My guests are Cassie Rose. My guests are Chris Hickey. And Chris Hickey, give us some more quick picks from the Columbus Library.
All right. I have another romance for you. But before I share that, I want to say something in general about a lot of the romance novels you'll find on the quick picks. I attended this great session at the Public Library Association conference a couple of years ago, and it was called Read Romance, Fight the Patriarchy. And so these are not your grandmother's romance novels. And these are a lot of these romance novels you'll see, they have cartoon covers, but they are like the women are, it's written from their perspective, and they're strong and they're smart and they know what they're looking for. And the men are kind. They're, you know, they have flaws, but they're good hearted.
So that's the fantasy part.
Right.
Sorry, Christopher. Present company accepted.
Oh, food. And it's just, the books are delightful. The books are delightful. So this one is by B.K. Borison, who's another new novel. And just like Sarah Adams from before, they were self-published authors that were then later picked up by publishing houses. So this one is called And Now Back to You. It's part of the Heartstrings series. So again, it's one of those series where you don't have to read them in order. The people pop in and out, and it's all the same setting. So this is about two meteorologists that fall in love, and they have opposing personalities. So Delilah like spontaneity. She loves to be out in the field covering the weather. And Jackson would rather have routine. He likes to be in his is it a cubicle? What do you call this? His little studio.
He's MIT. She's Sarah Lawrence.
It's okay. Okay.
Something
there we
like
go.
Oberlin.
There we go.
Yeah. Oberlin. Yeah. Yeah. Okay.
So they are right. Thrown together to cover this storm of the century that is happening in Baltimore. Yes. And if you know Baltimore, she lives in Baltimore and she writes about Baltimore. So if you know the Fells Point neighborhood, so you'll recognize Baltimore if you know it. So this is inspired by When Harry Met Sally. So I'm seeing this trend. This other one inspired by classic films, I think, seems to also be a trend in romance books, because the first book in this series, which was called First Time Caller, was inspired by Sleepless in Seattle. So we've got like a Meg Ryan thing going on here. But one of the neat things about Delilah is she is a body positive type of character. She is not skinny. She is curvy. And she unapologetically loves delicious food. So it's nice to see those female characters who are not, you know, denying themselves so that they can look better for the men. And Jackson is perfectly fine with that.
What does he look like? Yeah.
Oh, he's gorgeous. Come on.
Okay.
Yeah, come on. She's gorgeous.
Part
she's gorgeous too.
Gray, and you know, paunchy and everything else.
Yeah. That doesn't happen.
All right. Well, then they're not real true to life. But that's why we call them romance.
You know, everything's gonna be fine.
Yeah, that's
they're
right.
Just very sweet. But all of the people in this series work at a radio station.
Well, talk about steam. Okay. Well, that's good. Yeah, give us the title again.
This is called And Now Back to You by B.K. Borison.
And that is a quick pick from
that
the Columbus Library. So there's a long waiting list for it.
There is.
Really?
Yeah.
roughly, what is it?
You know what? Probably at this point, a couple hundred.
No kidding.
Yeah.
All right. Jump the line. You come there on Tuesdays. Is that
Tuesdays
right?
Tuesdays are often, that's the release date for new publishing, and that is when we try to have those on the shelf.
And the displays of quick picks are the same in every branch.
Yes. Whatever branch that is your neighborhood branch, go in there and you should be able to find them.
All right. A recommendation from Cassie Rowe. From Chris Hickey. That's Chris Hickey on my left, right? You know?
Hello.
Have we fixed your mic? Good.
Yeah, right.
Cassie Rose is here. She is WOH's book critic and criticize something or love something.
Well, I will do both. I actually recently did a review on this book. It's called Upward Bound by Woody Brown, and it comes out March 31st. And it takes place in Los Angeles in a daycare center for young adults who are primarily autistic and non-speaking. And it opens with a young man named Walter, and he is one of their, they're called clients, although Walter will often refer to himself and his peers as inmates. He's very bold and free-speaking, and in the middle of the book he says, you know, he said, someone needs to tell the story of my people, and he says, I need to do it. So he's this narrator. And so in the opening, he is in the rec room, and Jorge, his friend, just goes out. Jorge's what's called an eloper. He just walks away, and it's not like he's trying to escape. He's going to something, but people just don't know what he's going to. Well, nobody's paying attention, and even though Walter is saying they need to. So he goes out to find Walter, who is sitting in a terracotta tunnel on the playground. And he's just sitting there. And Walter decides to sit on a bench beside the basketball hoop and just be with him as his friend. Well, you know, eventually they find them and they get them in. And of course, the director, who is very strict and goes by the rules, feels that he has to do an incident report because they did something wrong. And the point here is that neither Walter nor Jorge, because they're non-speaking, can defend themselves or explain. What this book is, what the story primarily is in this novel, which is more linked to stories, is about how the disabled are underestimated and
Amen.
and not heard, and how they are, well, spoken at and not to. And it's done in such a way that is, I don't want to say it's lighthearted, but it has, there's, you don't get this heavy negative feeling. And that's because I think of Walter, and also because ultimately I think the message here is for them, you know, we are the other, not them. And there's
You're the typicals. Yeah, you're the neurotypicals.
And there's a turning point in the book, which is very understated. And there is a young college girl that is working there over the summer at this place called Upward Bound, which that's the name of the daycare place. And you know, she's, you know, recognizes immediately that she's making gross assumptions, and she has great self-awareness. So there is, just to say overall, she really transforms things there. And for the clients. And there's this one moment where there's Emma, who's very quiet and withdrawn, but filled with anxiety on the inside, which Walter sees. Anyway, there is one day she puts her hands, Emma puts her hands on her head, on her hair, and she's trying to tell Anne that she wants a French braid done because Anne has a French braid. And Anne doesn't understand what she's doing or why she's doing it until she does. And at that moment, she gets it. And the first thing she gets is that she's the other, not them. And then she realizes that what Emma is doing is that she's letting her in. And that's what happens with Anne throughout most of the book. Now, you get other viewpoints from also Tom, who has cerebral palsy. You know, and he's trapped in a rigid body, but he can hear and understand everything. This is really a, I said this in my review, I said this is trailblazing literature. And it's because the author, Woody Brown, is autistic and non-speaking.
I was going to say that it sounds very authentic to what, the way you describe it.
Yes, and he is the first autistic non-speaking young adult to graduate from UCLA with honors in the English department, and he got an MFA from Columbia.
Wow.
So now, Walter in here, as I was reading it, I got the feeling that Walter is a lot, that a lot of Woody Brown is in Walter. Walter learns to, or has been homeschooled by his mom, and she teaches him to communicate with a letter board.
Right.
So there's much in this book, much that is eye-opening, much that is, you will, it's humorous because Walter is humorous, but it does take you inside their world.
You know that I have a connection and love for that community. So Woody Brown is the author. Mm-hmm. The title is Upward Bound, and it is available When?
It comes out on March 31st.
March 31st, okay. Thank you very much, Cassie Rose, for that recommendation. We are talking about books today on The Book Show, All Sides Weekend on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Christopher Purdy, and Michelle Herman has another Mrs. Bridge. Yeah.
Okay. So, I've always loved to read that book.
Before I get to Mrs. Bridge, discovering Allegra Goodman so many years after the rest of the world discovered her, has kind of sent me back to thinking about other books that are sort of domestic dramas, family dramas, that I particularly love. And so I decided to bring in Jhumpa Lahiri's second collection of stories, Unaccustomed Earth. This was published 20 years ago. And let me say, at my age, I'm now 71, I don't reread books anymore. This is a book I have reread again and again and again. Whenever I feel like, of course, now I've discovered Allegra Goodman, but frequently when I feel like I need the gold standard of that kind of book, and I need it to be written so gorgeously that it's going to take my breath away. And, you know, I should say, when I talk about written gorgeously, I don't mean purple prose. I don't mean fancy writing or writing that's filled with metaphors. I just mean writing that is so luminous and highly polished that it feels like reading a poem, with the exception that you know what you're reading about. You don't have to work hard to understand it. So Unaccustomed Earth is stories. They are not linked stories, although the final three stories in the book are a trio that go together about the same people, that takes you everywhere from grief to ecstasy. Really, maybe the best three linked stories I have ever read. But the others are simply stories about marriages, parents and children. I was glancing through it again to try to figure out how to convey the sort of beautiful eccentricity of these stories. And I noticed something. The openings of the stories share something in common. The opening of the story, Hell Heaven, is Pranab Chakraborty wasn't technically my father's younger brother. Which, back when I was teaching writing, I always talked to the undergrads about writing a first sentence that raises lots of questions that the reader wants answered. And this story about the narrator's observing of the man that she grows up calling Pranab Kaku, like as if he's her uncle, and his relationship with her parents, particularly her mother, is so complex and so layered that by the time you get to the end of what's, I don't know, a 22-page story, you feel like you understand everything about their lives and about these people. The story, A Choice of Accommodations, begins, "From the outside, the hotel looked promising, like an old ski lodge in the mountains. Chocolate brown siding, a steeply pitched roof, red trim around the windows. But as soon as they entered the lobby of the Chadwick Inn, Amit was disappointed. The place was without character." So And I will say, I'm not only recommending this book. This happened to be one I had on my shelf that I could grab. Her novel, The Namesake, which was made into a lovely movie, one of the rare examples, I think, of a good book that's made into a good movie, because, you know, I have a little proverb, an old proverb I made up, which is that bad books make good movies and good books make bad movies, which is usually true, I think. But all her books, I will tell you something about Jhumpa Lahiri that's really interesting. She is still publishing, and her last few books are interesting, but they are not brilliant in the way her earlier books are. Cassie, do you know her books? Do you know her story?
I do not.
She grew up bilingual. She grew up in Boston with Bengali parents, and she spoke both languages, has always written in English, and her novels were translated into many languages. Some years ago, she was studying Italian and moved to Italy with her family and made the decision to write only in Italian. And not even to translate her own books at first. She would write these books in Italian. Someone else would translate them. And I will admit I was fascinated by this, but I was also very disappointed when I read the first one, because the language that had always been luminous was very simple. She has gotten more sophisticated, and she has also started translating her own books, but she is still writing in Italian, and then she will translate the books into English. The language has changed. The way she portrays relationships has changed. She's written a memoir about doing this, too.
But she must be brilliant, because if she's writing in vernacular Italian and not studied formal Italian, and that was not her first language, and she took it as an adult, that's very unusual.
Oh, she's a very unusual... Oops, sorry. She's a very... I just kicked Chris Hickey. not on purpose. She's a very unusual person. But I mention all of this both because she's fascinating and because if you go searching for her books, you will see a complete shift in the material itself. It's all worth reading, but this one was published 20 years ago.
Now, where is that in the chronology of her work?
This is her third book,
okay.
Unaccustomed Earth. I can't remember because, of course, the book only mentions the other two at the beginning. I think there are five, maybe six books before she made the transition to Italian. I'm very curious about what she will do next, like if she'll continue to do this for the rest of her life.
Or what other language she might choose to
write in. Well, I think what she wanted to do was get at that experience of living in another language, which, you know, her parents did, and she grew up in a tight Bengali community, but she had one foot there and one foot in her American life. And I'm always interested in stories of first-generation Americans. I'm a second-generation American, but I've always thought of myself as first-generation because my grandparents, who immigrated from Eastern Europe, played such a large part in raising me. And I had a very similar experience to first-gen people. Anyway, that is my
recommendation.
Jhumpa Lahiri.
From Michelle Herman. And we're going to take one more break and then come back. Don't go away. We're back. This is All Sides Weekend Books, the book show. I'm Christopher Purdy with Michelle Herman, who is Professor Emerita of English Creative Writing at The Ohio State University. She has a new book out. Chris Hickey is here from the Columbus Metropolitan Library. She is the Youth Services Manager at the Whetstone Branch. And Chris brings us the quick picks. And Cassie Rose is WOSU's book critic, and her blog is thelongestchapter.com. What's on the blog right now?
On the blog right now is a review of Andrew Krivok's novel, Mule Boy, which I actually talked about in the last show. And I'm getting ready to publish a blog post about the international long list, the Booker long list.
Explain what the Booker Prize is, just in case people don't know.
Well, this is the international one comes out first, and this is the UK's top prize for translated literature that has been published in English in the UK and Ireland. And it is, there are 13 books on the long list, and it's very impressive. And I decided I've picked out a handful that I've wanted to read. They are going to, it's only about another week they're going to list the short list for it. And I've got two more books that I want to read, and each of them are about 400 pages, so I've got to get cracking. The Booker then comes out also with another prize that is the equivalent, I would say, of our Pulitzer or our National Book Award. Their long list comes out in August for not translated literature, but books that are published in the UK and in Ireland. And that's a very prestigious prize. This one for translated literature, I like the fact that they do two separate prizes versus, I think, like the National Book Award has their book in fiction, and then they also have translated fiction all in one. But this kind of gives translated literature its own spotlight, or translated literature its own spotlight. And I like that for the authors and also for the translators.
And what do you have for us to read?
Well, to, I will go with another, well, I don't want to go with that one because that's another one, a war story. I want to go with one that is a involving story with a wonderful character. It's called Angel by Elizabeth Taylor. Elizabeth Taylor, not the actress, but the British author that unfortunately was writing during when Elizabeth Taylor, the actress, starred in, what was it called? Velvet.
National Velvet.
National Velvet, yes. The same time, you know.
She should have added a middle name.
Yeah, right. Right to her. So this is a story of a girl named Angel, who is a very unlikable character. At the age of 16, she's rude to her mother. Her friends in school think that she is arrogant. And she thinks she's arrogant because she thinks she's better than everyone, even though her mother just owns a grocery store. They live above the grocery store. Her father had died. But Angel is sure that she is going to be famous and fabulous, and she doesn't have time for anyone else. And so long story short, she decides she's going to write some books. So she is sick in bed and she's writing this novel, and she decides she can't go to school anymore, continues to fake being sick. And then she sends her book off to a publisher. It gets it gets rejected. Then she goes to another one and they call her in. They think they're going to get an old woman who's been sitting at the kitchen table with lace curtains because of the way that it's romantic and racy. There's this posh house with 18 butlers, and it's little on the, at least for literature, when the book takes place in the late 1800s, around Victorian times, and she's going a little too far with the touching, we'll say that. So anyway,
no nookie in these books. That's it.
Exactly. So she's sitting in front of the publishers, and they're saying, yes, we like it, but you know, really, you don't need 18 butlers. You only need one.
And you're 16 years old.
Yes, right. Here and here you are. You've got this card game with the lead, Irina, and if she loses, she has to sleep with the Baron. And she stops him and she goes, I didn't say sleep. I said lie with. So anyway, they tell her the changes, and she just looks at them and she says, no. That's all it is. And she leaves and, you know, thinking I've lost everything. Well, they eventually decide to go with it. Now, the other thing is that it gets published and it becomes wildly popular. One of the things that is very funny, too, is that she has an aunt who is working in a posh house as lady in waiting, you could say. And the book goes wild among the servants. And of course, one of them approaches her and asks her if she'll get in a card game with him. And so there are these moments in the book which just make you laugh out loud. But meanwhile, Angel is not a likable character, but you like her because she's not likable, and which is really kind of odd. But
horrible people are fun.
They
can be a lot of fun.
And she is. So anyway, I highly recommend it. It's called Angel by Elizabeth Taylor. It was made into a movie.
With Elizabeth Taylor.
Well, no. Really, I don't know. In 2007. But also, Elizabeth Taylor is someone that I have read a couple of her books. Mrs. Palfrey at the Claremont,
and that was made into a movie too.
Yes, which I loved that book. So,
and this is Elizabeth Taylor, not the actress.
Not the actress.
Okay,
it's called Angel.
A recommendation from Cassie Rose here on the Book Show, and Chris Hickey. Steam us some more. Give us some more steam or whatever.
Isn't steam.
Okay.
It's very good. It's very good. This is Tayari Jones' new novel called Kin. She is known for her novel An American Marriage. And so
that was a big hit.
Huge hit. Yeah. So Oprah Book Club pick. This is also an Oprah Book Club pick. So it's a character novel about female friendship and how it endures through childhood and when people go in different directions in their lives. And so it's a bit of found family. So these two young girls are both without mothers. So Vernice, or also known as Niecy, her father killed her mother. And Annie, her mother ran off. So they have this in common. Niecy goes off to college in Atlanta, where she is embraced with in this group of powerful, affluent Black women. So her life is very different. Annie doesn't have the same opportunities and instead decides to go searching for her mother. And it's a very challenging journey that she goes on. And at one point, she accidentally sits in the wrong part of the bus. This takes place in the 50s and 60s. So as adults in this novel, it's epistolary in this way. So there are letters inside that this is how they communicate with each other through letters. And Tayari Jones wanted to explore, like, what do you say? What do you put on the record in a letter? How is that communication different? And so she originally wrote these characters as a backstory for other characters. They were the parents of some characters she had in mind, but they just took off, and so they became the whole book. They became the whole book. So readers who have read this have said that she does really capture what it's like to be a girl without a mother. Mm-hmm. So people, I think, will find these characters relatable. And she wrote it also because she wanted to get to know her own mother better. Her own mother would participate in sit-ins in Oklahoma, and she wanted to explore that as well. But this is, if you liked An American Marriage, you're going to love this. This is a very worthy follow-up. So I think people are going to very much like this. I think it's going to be talked about quite a bit. And I think it's really interesting to read novels that have letters within them. I really enjoyed The Correspondent, and I wonder if this will bring some letter writing back for people. And I know Tayari Jones is hoping that this will inspire some of her readers.
It's almost a lost art.
How she refers to it, as the lost art.
The use of the language. I've been reading the letters for Lent of Dorothy Day, and there's one that she wrote to the IRS that's absolutely brilliant. It's scathing, but it's so polite. It's just the use of the language is great. So I'm with Tayari about wanting the art of letter writing to come back. This book is called Kin.
And because found family is very much
Oprah's
a theme.
Book club.
It is an Oprah book club.
Which Ms. Jones's previous book, I think, was as well.
That is correct. Yes. American Marriage was an Oprah book club pick.
That
as
is
well.
A quick pick from the Columbus Library. Get on the list with your library card or show up early on a Tuesday. It might be there right on the shelf looking at you. Quick picks from the Columbus Library with Chris Hickey. So you brought us Mrs. Bridge already.
I brought Mrs. Bridge because I was going down that rabbit hole of great domestic novels. Mrs. Bridge is among the handful of novels I consider the greatest novels ever written. This was published in 1959. I was four. I didn't discover it until I was in my 20s. I've read it many times. It is the story of Mrs. Bridge's life. And you know how I love to read an opening line. I could do this by memory. But there are short numbered chapters, very short. The first chapter is one, Love and Marriage. And it begins, her first name was India. She was never able to get used to it. And the second line is, it seemed to her that her parents must have been thinking of someone else when they named her. It is heartbreaking. It just gets into every little detail of her long marriage and her relationships with her children. It's a devastating and wonderful book. And, you know, I don't know that I've ever looked at the original flap copy of the book before, nor have I ever read Schopenhauer, but I was just glancing at it. And the flap copy begins, Schopenhauer suggested that the business of the novelist is not to relate great events, but to make small ones interesting. And that's my entire credo. I mean, I know there are people who love novels about great events. And you love novels. Cassie loves novels about great events as well as novels about. So I don't have a lot of, I was going to say patience. That's not it. I generally don't have a lot of interest in, like, stuff happening. And even when it's a novel in which a lot of stuff happens, like War and Peace, which is a novel I love, the part of it, the heart of it, what I really love about it, are the intricacies of the relationships and the way the characters are revealed. And this book really is a novel-length character study of a woman living a very small, ordinary Midwestern life.
Who is the author?
Evan S. Cannell, who is kind of a tragic figure, actually. I mean, he did write Bowing to Popular Demand, because the book was enormously successful in its time. He wrote Mr. Bridge.
Right, I was going to say there's two of them.
Which is not as good, but it is quite good. And if you read Mrs. Bridge, you will desperately want to read Mr. Bridge. And I don't know when, 70s maybe, a movie was made.
Paul Newman and Joanne Woodward.
Yeah, they got the rights to it, and they made a movie that combined. And I think It was an okay movie, but it fits into my construct.
I didn't get the impression that these novels needed to be movies. You know,
But you know that it's an irresistible urge that Hollywood has, and also he did write some additional stories that were published, I think, in Esquire. But he drank himself to death, and nothing else he ever published came anywhere near the level of this. This is a true literary achievement. And when I say that, I want to stress that I don't mean that it's not a joy to read. It's not a difficult book. It's not ponderous. You don't have to work hard at it. You will start reading it and just sink into it. So highly recommended. 10 out of 10.
Mrs. Bridge, a recommendation. 10 out of 10 from Michelle Herman. That's something. That means you should read this book. I don't know why I didn't read. Maybe I did read Mrs. Bridge. It was a long time ago.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
And the memory has been fading lately. Yeah. So, I mean, what did I have for lunch? I have no idea. Cassie Rose, what do you got for us?
You know, I think I'm going to do a shout out to Ghost Town, which is by Tom Perotta, which is coming out in April. And a full transparency, though, I haven't read the full book yet. I'm sort of giving I've just started it. And I'm going to be interviewing Mr. Perotta at the Drexel on May 7th. So I just wanted to let everyone know, first of all, that he's got a new book coming out. And I've read Election, and I have read Tracy Flick Can't Win. And this book, I will say, I started last night, the first couple pages, and right off the bat, it starts out with a man who gets an email, and he is being asked to come back. He's very, very successful and a very successful writer, and he's being asked to come back to his small town in New Jersey because they are dedicating his childhood hometown. They're dedicating a building to his father, and they want him there for the ribbon cutting. And also the library wants him to come and speak at their library. Well, his first reaction is to read the email and shut it down. He doesn't delete it, but it's one of those setups where he has left behind his town. He has left behind all of it, packed all the memories, something that happened to him in a little box in his mind, put it under the bed and walked away and never came back. And now here this email
It's going to be a movie for sure.
So, yes,
it comes like in it.
So anyway, most of all, Tom Perotta readers, I mean, he's written many books. I have not read all of his book, but I've certainly have enjoyed Election and also the Tracy Flick Can't Win. And Chris, you're laughing, so you must have read some of his books.
I'm thinking of the movie Election.
Oh, okay.
And the character of
Reese Witherspoon is
yes.
It. Yes. So, and also, I think, I don't know where that they are going to do at the Drexel the week before Mr. Perotta comes, they are going to have run the Election movie.
Oh, that's fun.
So,
that's the one with Matthew Broderick, and it's like
yes,
a high
Matthew
school.
Yes, Matthew Broderick.
He's
is,
running
he's
for
a
student
teacher.
Council or something
he's
like that.
He's the teacher.
No, he's
and
Mr.
She's
M.
Running. Yes.
Yeah, and she's running. She's Tracy Flick.
Yes.
Yes. So anyway, Ghost Town, if you're a Tom Perotta fan, you know, certainly you can look forward to this book coming out in April, and maybe you'll come and hear our discussion at the Drexel.
You and I have done events together and interviewed authors. How do you interview an author? What do you do? How do you prepare, and what do you do?
I first of all, obviously I read the book and think of all the questions that I want to ask the author from the book, but I also do a lot of what I call for myself due diligence. I want to know about the author. I want to read not just other books that they have written, but I want to do research on their other interviews. So I'll go online and I look up on YouTube, where have they had discussions with who? What have they said about their books? And what is it that I can find that might be an interesting little tidbit that we could have a full discussion on?
So about your third wife, let's talk.
I'll tell you, one of the things, like when I interviewed Anne Lamott, I had discovered that she had said something about Taylor Swift, and boy, she just got ripped apart on social media. And somehow, I mean, I wasn't planning to talk with her about it, but it came up naturally in the interview. And that's the kind of thing I'd like to have. If I've done a lot of reading and seen a lot of the interviews, I will have the sense of the author and what they have been through in their lives. And so it naturally just comes up in the interview.
May 7th, is that right?
Correct. It's
Will
May 7th.
Will you be at the Drexel with
it's
Tom
at the
Parada?
Drexel. Tom Parada.
I put it on the calendar. We look forward to that. We have like 30 seconds each.
All right. Once and Again by Rebecca Searle. So if you could go back in time and change one thing in your life, would you do it? The three women in this family have that power. They can only use it once.
Okay. Don't tell them. Don't give it away. Michelle Herman.
Okay. I brought a book that was published in 2011 that made me laugh out loud because I decided everyone needed something to make them laugh. It's called Cool, Calm, and Contentious. It's by Meryl Marco, who is a writer and comedian. She, many years ago, wrote for Dave Letterman. It's essays, short, funny, personal essays.
And that's it. Thank you very much for that. Thank you for the recommendation from Michelle Herman. I'm Christopher Purdy. This is All Sides Weekend Books. Thank you, Cassie Rose. Thank you, Michelle Herman. Thank you, Chris Hickey. Thank you, Chris Johnson, for making it radio. Thank you, Marcus Charleston, our producer. Thank you all for listening. This is 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.